trusting God in difficult times. That's what we're working through. Today we are in our last book looking at the book of Esther and the person of Esther. If you want to turn there in your Bibles right now. And next week we're going to start a series called Stories of the Kingdom, looking at some of the teachings of Jesus. And next week will be the wise and foolish builders. So stay tuned for that. But today, just to help us wrap our minds around what's going on, I thought it would be good for us to break up the characters in this account into different teams, okay? And Pokemon was just released this week. You all heard about it probably, and if you haven't, that's okay too, I guess, but where have you been? So we're going to break our teams up into three teams, Team Blue, Team Red, and Team Yellow today, okay? That's how we're going to understand what we're talking about. On Team Blue, we're going to have Esther and Mordecai. Mordecai is a cousin to Esther. They are both Jewish. Esther, it turns out, beautiful woman, most beautiful in the land where she was living. Her parents died, and Mordecai took her in and raised her as his own. And so blue team is Esther and Mordecai. Then we have the red team. Red team is Xerxes, king of Persian Empire. He likes to party a lot. I think he makes most of his decisions after he's been drinking. And he likes to abdicate responsibility to others, and he's a really prideful guy. And then finally, Team Yellow is Haman. And Haman, one of the top advisors to King Xerxes, and thought the world owed him, and he really hated anybody who wouldn't acknowledge his position and bow down to him. So these are the three teams, okay? And you see that I like the color blue the best. So Team Mordecai and Esther. But let's start off today with a question. Is God still here? How do we know God is doing anything in the world? How do we know that he's even present? I was talking with some friends yesterday, and one of them said, you know, it seems like the news is just presenting us with a different violent act each week. What's going on in the world? So let's have a look at Esther and see if there is some sort of answer to that. And as we're reading along, look for instances where you see, yeah, that's God at work. Because we're going to work through the whole book. Esther wasn't meant to be picked apart verse by verse. It's one big account of something that happened where God rescued his people. So we're going to look at the whole book today, stopping at certain points along the way and then bringing it all together at the end. But this is how it starts. Esther, chapter 1, we're starting with Team Red, so Xerxes. This is what happened during the time of Xerxes. The Xerxes who ruled over 127 provinces stretching from India to Kush. At that time, King Xerxes reigned from his royal throne in the citadel of Susa. And in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his nobles and officials. The military leaders of Persia and Media, the princes and the nobles of the provinces were present. And for 180 days, he showed off his wealth, his status, his power, his glory, and his majesty. And then when those days were over, he gave another banquet that lasted 7 days. That was in his own personal garden in the palace. And for all the people, from the least to the greatest, who were in the citadel with him. So Xerxes was a monarch who reigned from around 486 to 465 BCE. His father's name was Darius. And the Persian Empire was one of the most powerful empires that had ever been. If you go to the map, that's how far it stretched. You see the Arabian Sea all the way to the Mediterranean Sea, Black Sea. It was huge. And the capital of that empire was Susa. And Jerusalem and Israel were also part of this kingdom. And what had happened in the history of the Jews in particular, Babylon had taken the Jews into exile about 70 years before this. All of Israel was basically plundered, and all of the people were moved into different parts of Babylon and what is Persia. And during that time, the ruler was Cyrus, and some Jews were given permission to go back to Jerusalem and start to rebuild the city, to rebuild the temple so that they could worship their God there. And Nehemiah and Ezra were two of the people who led that whole process. And the events of Esther that happened, happened right in between when Ezra and Nehemiah were starting to build the temple in the city and when they finished it. So Esther was right in the middle there in this land of Persia in Susa, far away from what was going on with the rest of the Jews. So you can see that some of the Jews returned, but many of them stayed where they were. They had built lives for themselves there. And so there was this huge party. And Xerxes was just proud of himself. He was happy about himself. And it was amazing. And while they were having some drinks and Xerxes had drunk a lot, he wanted his wife, Queen Vashti, who was also having a party with the ladies of the court, wanted her to come in front of them with her crown on her head and parade her around like a trophy. This is what it said in Esther 1 verse 10. On the seventh day when King Xerxes was in high spirits from wine, he sent some servants to Queen Vashti and said, "Come, put your crown on and come be in front of all of my friends here." And when the attendants delivered the king's command to Queen Vashti, she refused to come. And Xerxes, of course, was furious with anger, and this set off a huge commotion in the kingdom. If the king's wife doesn't have to obey the king, the nobles started to say, from the lowest man to you, King Xerxes, how are we going to get our wives to obey us? It's not going to work. We have to do something about this. You see the tension? How difficult it could be? I know we're not like that anymore. Well, some people would like us to be that way, but I certainly hope not. So Xerxes, there was something in place. Maybe it was a law. Maybe it was just his own heart. He didn't want to execute Queen Vashti. So he consulted with his wise men and he said, "What do we do?" And they said, "You know what? You need to send her away. She's never allowed to be in your presence ever again. And then you need to ban her from the palace. And she's no longer queen. We need to find a replacement to be queen. And then you need to send out a note to everybody saying, you need to really obey your husbands." So this is what happened. He sent out this edict that did that. And all the wives in the kingdom were supposed to step into line and listen to their husband's command. And Vashti, she was simply standing up for herself. She wasn't a possession to be displayed. She was a ruler in the kingdom. And she had some influence based on how she was dealt with. And then Xerxes, after he stopped being angry with the queen, went to his advisors and said, "You know what? We need to have a beauty pageant. And we're going to get all of the virgins from the kingdom, all the beautiful girls. We're going to bring them to you. And whichever one pleases you, she will be the new queen." So this brought Team Blue into place, Mordecai and Esther. And her Jewish name was actually Hadassah, and her Persian name was Esther. And this is what happened, Esther 2, verse 7. Mordecai had a cousin named Hadassah, whom he brought up because she was had neither father nor mother. This young woman, who was also known as Esther, had a lovely figure and was beautiful. Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother died. So Esther, along with many other women from the kingdom, were rounded up, placed in a year-long program of beauty treatments and polishing, and then they were presented to Xerxes. And Mordecai, when this whole process started, he talked to Esther and he said, "You cannot reveal that you are a Jew. You need to keep that secret." And so she obeyed him in that. And then after the preparation period, all these women were brought in front of Xerxes. And Esther, during that preparation period, really became popular with the head servant who was taking care of these girls. He even gave her the best room in the place where they were being prepared. And all of these girls had to go and spend the night with Xerxes. And whichever one pleased him the most, she would become queen. And Esther won. So Xerxes made her queen. Holiday happened. Gifts were given. Things were looking up. And Mordecai, at that point, took up residence at what was called the king's gate. And while he was there, he was able to uncover a plot. Two of Xerxes' door wardens, door guards, were plotting to kill him. So Mordecai sent word to Esther, Esther sent word to Xerxes, and these guys were arrested and executed for this plot. Mordecai's name was written in a book recording the events of the king, so just a historical record. Things were going well. Then enter Team Yellow, Haman. Haman became the closest advisor to the king. The king gave him an amazing amount of power, even placed his own ring on Haman's finger. The king was impressed with this guy. And in Esther 3 verse 2, it says, all the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai, of course, not necessarily part of the royal court, wouldn't bow down to Haman. So a battle started between Team Blue and Team Yellow. And every day Haman would walk past Mordecai, all the officials would bow down to Haman, and there would be Mordecai standing there, not doing what he was told. And it started to really just wreck Haman's work day. You know how you have that one person that you have to walk by at work sometimes, and slowly it just wears on you day after day because you know that they're not with you? And this really got to Haman, so much so that he wasn't just happy with destroying Mordecai. He wanted all of the Jews to suffer. He wanted to destroy them all just because of this one guy. So Team Yellow hatched a little plan in Esther 3 verse 8. Haman came to Xerxes and he said, you know, there is a certain people dispersed among the people of all the provinces of your kingdom, and they keep themselves separate. Their customs are different from those of all the other people, and they do not obey the king's laws. It is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them, and I will give 10,000 talents of silver to the king's administrators for the royal treasury. So the king took his signet ring, gave it to Haman, and he said, keep the money and do with the people as you please. So a bunch of dispatches were sent all over the kingdom to every corner of the Persian Empire. And on a single day, from young and old, everyone was allowed to attack the Jews. And a copy of that text was sent to everyone so that they would know, on this day, wipe them out, and then you get to take everything that they own. And Mordecai, of course, sitting in the king's gate, he found out about this. He put on sackcloth and he went into a period of mourning. And Esther hadn't heard about the plot, this edict yet. So she sent word to Mordecai saying, what's going on? And so he told her that the Jews were going to be destroyed. Gave her a copy of the edict. And he said, you need to go and speak to the king about this. Go in front of him. Tell him what's going on. But Esther didn't want to. She was afraid, because going in front of the king without being summoned, without him asking you to be there, the first sentence was death, unless he extended his golden scepter to you. That's the only way you wouldn't be executed. So Esther sent that word back to Mordecai. Mordecai, he said in Esther 4, verse 12, and this is sort of the heart of Esther, he sent back this answer, do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. And so Esther sent word back and she said, Mordecai, I want you with all the Jews in Susa to go into a time of fasting for 3 days, and I'll do it with my household servants here. And then I'll approach the king. And you may be wondering at this point, where is any mention of God in this whole story? And if you actually read through the book of Esther, there's no mention of God at all. There's no mention of Jewish laws, of Jewish customs. There's a little bit of genealogy at the beginning. But everything about Jewish culture, about God, is absent from the story. And there's not even any mention that Mordecai or Esther are even followers of God at this point. But to Jewish people reading this account, who'd nearly been destroyed by the nations around them. This was a story that was full of hope. And we'll see why in a little bit. But sometimes we find ourselves in situations that we just don't get. We don't understand why we're placed there. Situations where we're given an opportunity and we're thinking, why is this my opportunity? Why has this been given to me? And Esther is a book that helps us look at a bigger picture, a bigger view of why we might be in any given situation. So, Esther 5, Esther goes to the king. She put on her royal robes and she stood in the inner court of the palace. This is in Esther chapter 5, in front of the king's hall. And the king was sitting on his royal throne in the hall, facing the entrance. And when he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her. And he held out to her the golden scepter that was in his hand. So she approached and touched the tip of the scepter. And then the king said, you know, what do you want, Queen Esther? I'm going to give it to you, up to half my kingdom. And Esther said, you know, if it pleases you, I just want to invite you to a banquet at my place. And I want you to bring Haman. And the king said, you know what? Bring Haman at once so we can do whatever Esther asks. So they went to this banquet, and again at the banquet, the king goes, what do you want? It's yours, up to half my kingdom. And Esther replied, you know, she's sort of testing the waters here. She's like, if this banquet pleased you, let the king and Haman come back tomorrow, and then I'll give you the question that I have. So Esther risks her own life to bring something to the king's attention. And she tests the waters to see if it's safe to keep going. And if you've ever seen The Office, the comedy show, Haman in this story is like Michael Scott, a sort of an incompetent manager who thinks everything revolves around his world. And Mordecai is like Toby, the human resources guy. And every time Michael Scott walks past him, he just gets down because Toby's there to ruin his fun. So Haman leaves this banquet and he's just excited. He calls all his house together and all his friends. He's like, this is awesome. I've gone to the first banquet, just me and the king and the queen. And now I'm going again tomorrow. And as he's leaving the palace, who does he have to walk by? Mordecai. Again, not bowing to him. And it sort of ruins the moment. And so his friends go, you know what you need to do? You need to build a big post, you know, 20 meters high, and you need to stick Mordecai on that post and execute him. So Mordecai went, okay, yeah, I think I can do that. So after his little party with his friends, he decides to go back and see the king. But between the two banquets, that one night, the king having kind of a hard time sleeping, and he asks for his historical records to be read to him. And while the attendant was reading this account to him, they came to the story of Mordecai, where he had exposed this threat against the king and had stopped it. And King Xerxes said, have we done anything to honor this guy? And the attendant said, nothing's been done for him. So the king goes, who's in the court here? Who can we talk to about this? And he said, Haman, he just came into the court. And so, you know what? Bring him to me. And the king said to Haman, what should be done for the man the king wants to honor? And you know Haman, the world is revolving around him. Oh, he thought to himself, who is there the king would rather honor than me? So he answered the king, for the man the king delights to honor, have them bring a royal robe that the king has worn. Have them put on a horse that the king has ridden with the royal seal on it. And then let the robe and the horse be entrusted to one of the king's most noble princes. Let them robe the man the king delights to honor and lead him on the horse through the city streets, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man the king delights to honor. You see where this is going. Xerxes says, go and do this for Mordecai. Make sure you do it yourself exactly as you have said. So Haman does what he's told. And he goes home and he's just ashamed of himself. And his wife and some of his advisors say, you know what? And this is where you see God work again. Since Mordecai, before whom your downfall has started, is of Jewish origin, you cannot stand against him. You will surely come to ruin. So what started out to be a good 2 days is starting to really get bad for Team Yellow. So banquet number two, the three of them get together. Good dinner. The king goes, okay, what do you want? Up to half my kingdom, the officer again. And the queen said, if I have found favor with you, your majesty, this is Esther 7, and if it pleases you, grant me my life. This is my petition, and spare my people. This is my request. For I and my people have been sold to be destroyed, killed, and annihilated. If we had merely been sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet because no such distress would justify disturbing the king. And King Xerxes asked Queen Esther, who is he? Where is the man who has dared to do such a thing? And Esther says, an adversary, an enemy, this vile Haman. And then Haman was terrified. And the king was so upset, got up, left the room. Haman knew the king had already made his decision about what was going to happen. He was going to be executed. And so he begged the queen for his life, and he was so distressed that he threw himself onto the couch that the queen was sitting on. And Xerxes came back, and you can see how everything just compounding worse for Haman. He's like, now you're even going to molest my queen while she's in my house? And so one of the attendants said, you know, Haman put up this big post to stick Mordecai on. And the king says, impale Haman on it. And then the king's fury subsided. And when you look at the story of Esther, you go, you know, what do you call it when nobody in the story is really paying attention to God? You call it providence. It's God's divine care and direction. And one commentator, I like the way he puts it, he says, it's God's attention concentrated everywhere. God's not absent in the events of our world, both the big and the small. God works for his people, whether they know it or not. And how does the story end? Xerxes gives all of Haman's property to Esther. Esther gives it to Mordecai. Mordecai takes over the role that Haman had. But the king can't go back on his law. He can't take that day away where the Jews are going to be annihilated. So he says to Mordecai and Esther, to some of the scribes there, make up a law as you see fit. And so they did. They said, all the Jews on that day can defend themselves. And anyone who attacks them, they can plunder them and destroy them. So when that day came, the Jews did. Wherever they were attacked, they defended themselves and they destroyed their enemies. And it was going so well that Esther even asked that in the city of Susa, whether he could extend it for one more day. And so Xerxes did. He really liked his queen. How does this look in our lives? Team Blue took risks to save their people. They used their positions. They used what they had been given to help those who needed saving. And if Esther had used her place in the king's court for her own gain, she wouldn't have risked everything to go illegally in front of the king on behalf of her people. She wouldn't have risked revealing that she was a Jew. But instead of seeking her own gain, she used what she had been given to do God's work. If Mordecai had only been out for himself, he would have tried to get a reward right away when he saved the king. Instead, he waited for the right moment. Esther and Mordecai lived in faith. They were unselfish. And the challenge for us is to live the same way. In the big picture, the book of Esther is about God saving his people. Even the ones who chose not to go back to Jerusalem. And ultimately, this story does point to Jesus, who set in motion a plan to save everyone who would follow him. In Romans 5:1-8, you'll see a very similar language. It says, therefore, since we have been justified through faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have gained access by faith into this grace in which we now stand. And we boast in the hope of the glory of God. Not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character, and character, hope. And hope does not put us to shame. Because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. You see, just at the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. The book of Esther doesn't mention God explicitly, but as you read it, you do see God at work. Esther and Mordecai were not put there by chance. They were put there for the sake of God's people. We are not put in places by chance. We're put there to be God's presence in our world. And God is not absent. And one of the reasons we're doing this event called Awake Friday, August 19th to 21st, it's free. You don't have to pay anything. There's lunch and dinner provided. Some people from our conference, from our mission organization that we're part of, are going to be up here doing some of the training. But we believe that it's not enough just to act right and to serve others. We believe that we have a responsibility to share the hope that we have in Jesus. And part of this weekend is going to be training us to do that. So that's sort of what happens on the Friday and Saturday morning. Saturday afternoon, we're going to go out into four different areas of the city. The park, I'm not going to butcher the name by saying, but at Fort George Park, we're going to be there on Sunday morning for a service. We're going to be involved in the MCC apartment area. We're going to be involved with our Syrian refugee families. And we're going to be involved in just the community around Westwood. And what I've been thinking about and praying about is the gym, if you haven't figured it out, has something to do with Pokemon on the internet. We are what is called a gymnasium. And if you notice, there are people parked out front or walking out front every day during the day. And there's some of you that are playing Pokemon right now. I'm trying to win the gym at the church. You know who you are. And they are willing to talk. I went out with the boys the other day. We went to this Pokemon, it's like a rest stop where you can pick up things. And we chatted with people we would never speak to. And so there's an opportunity there. And that's why we're doing Awake. And we want to invite you as, you know, particularly in groups, but individuals, but life group leaders, talk to your groups. I know it's summer, ministry team leaders, and get involved in that. Because it's going to be an incredible day where we'll hear stories of God at work. But leaving us with a question, do I trust that God's attention is on? And then fill in the blank. Because Jesus is greater than that, and he walks with us.